Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, Rochester. Yes, you are listening to this edition, August 17th of Soundbites. And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And Nick is, as we always like to say, one step ahead of the law, and who knows what's going on as far as that goes. But that's all right. You can turn that camera gladly the other way.
Now we get a shot of your chest. No, I got to go up a little higher to see your face.
Hold on. Hold on, folks. We're doing technical difficulties here.
That's pretty good.
That's really good.
And then when you
about just pointing up at the ceiling?
When you lean down to answer the phone, they get a nice shot of your eyeball.
Oh. For you folks that don't know.
Is it bloodshot?
Yeah. Yeah, we're broadcasting live on Ustream now, and I got my... we got two cameras set up so we can get everyone in the same shot now.
Yeah, so if folks don't know, if you do go to our webpage, soundbites.org, and that's with a Y, Francis would like us to tell you, you can either listen to us by streaming it, as Jazz 90.1 has an app also. So you folks out there with your cell phones, you can download the Jazz 90.1 app and put that on your phone and be listening to Soundbites no matter where you go. Along with that, we do scaring if you... Boy, that ain't coming out right. If you really want a good scare, because we've always said we have faces for radio, and that's where it should stay. But we do stream, like Steve said. We have a couple cameras. We're really getting high-tech. If we could get permanent ones in here, that'd be better. But you can actually see us live here in the studio. And it's kind of cramped. Not too bad, but it's cozy. And see us moving around here. And... like I say, a good
cozy.
Scare.
Cozy. Cozy. Yeah, that's a good word for
that's
it.
That's even a better word. My brain is still waking up.
this early in the morning.
Well, I got up super early. I got up earlier because I had some other things that I was having to do. As you know, I like doing my woodworking on the side, and I've been building this other cabinet to take up to Syracuse. And I was trying to get some of that done and some other things because we got friends coming over for a picnic tomorrow. Supposed to be, it's going to be decent. So I was up, you know, I hate it when you wake up, you know, you're going to go back to sleep. You hope you can go back to sleep, but your brain won't shut down. And I was thinking of this other issue. Sam and I were talking about another computer issue that I was working on a machine, and it's like, and trying to bat our heads back and forth and going on and that. I think she called you, Steve. And, you know, it's like one of those things. I just couldn't get my brain to quiet down.
Yep. And that's always tricky, that sometimes in the middle of the night, you'll solve a problem that you were fighting with all day long.
Yeah.
You just have to stop and think about something else for a while. Mm-hmm. So we always joke that when you're looking for something, you find it in the last place you look. Because it would be pretty stupid to keep looking after you found it. Oh, yeah, I found it three places ago, but I kept looking.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one other thing I was pointed out, and I didn't think much about it, and, you know, it's just one of those oddities that folks do without even thinking. And what I'm talking about is if you're going down the road in the car, all right, and we've got all this high-tech stuff, you know, syncing maps and everything else, but when you're trying to look at a map and you got the radio on, most folks turn down the radio.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but it helps you concentrate your eyes.
That's exactly why they do that.
The other factor that, I don't know why, I just happened to hit the site and it's like, for useless information, it's also for folks, if they're in a hurry and they get into a hotel or an office or a building and they quick hurry to go to up an elevator and the doors close and they're so frustrated. Well, they notice that if they put mirrors... in between the elevator doors, people tend to go over there and look to see if they look presentable and everything else, and it calms them down.
And it makes the elevator
It
makes the elevator look bigger too, so you're not crammed in a 4-foot box because of the mirrors make it look.
Well, no, I'm saying outside. If you happen to miss
outside too,
you miss your elevator, you know, and then they there's this mirror, and you look how stupid you look, you know, getting angry.
Yep.
It's just, like I said, this one's useless information. But anyways, tell you what, let's go to the phone. We got Carl in Pottstown, PA. How you doing, sir?
Good. How are you?
Just peachy, as Nick would say.
Oh, good. I have a question, of course. I signed up for Sirius XM Radio, and I'm listening over the Internet, not with a radio, just over the Internet. And unfortunately, they have a timeout on their Internet service. And
pain in the butt.
Gives me a pop-up window saying, due to inactivity, your session has ended or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm looking to record some pretty long shows, and I'm not going to be attending the computer while they're being recorded. So, of course, this is going to cut my recording off. So
yeah.
I'm looking for software that could simulate activity without my being there.
I've seen this happen on a lot of streaming services, the legal streaming services. They have to pay for every song that airs on the stream. So I've seen that on Pandora and on Songza. A little pop-up window will come along. Are you still there? Are you still listening? Because if you're not listening, we're going to stop because we don't want to have to pay for songs that no one's listening to. There is software I've seen, and I'm looking for it now, that will jiggle the mouse.
Yeah.
Every few minutes, it will jiggle the mouse, and so your computer thinks it's still alive. I don't know if that's going to make the internet stream know it's alive, but it will keep the computer from going to sleep.
Yeah, the question is whether you have to click on something or not.
Yeah, if there's something in the Sirius website, is it a website or an app?
It's a website.
Yeah. There may be something in the website that you have to click on to say that you're still there.
But usually you can find macros of some sort.
Yeah.
The Mac has like Quick Keys, and there's some other nice software out there.
Yeah, so a macro that will click a button or pull down a menu or just hit refresh every 2 hours. Well, see, if you hit refresh, then that's going to start the stream again, and there'll be a hiccup in your recording. We'll dig around, see if we can find anything, but I did search for a mouse jiggler, and I found a an open source code program. It will fake the mouse input. Are you on Windows or Mac?
Windows.
No, yeah, this is a Windows program. It will jiggle the mouse back and forth to make the computer think it's still awake. That's at least some place to start to see if the Sirius app sees that as the computer not going to sleep too. Have you tried setting your screensaver to never sleep and your energy saver to never sleep?
Yes, that's already been done.
Okay. So it's not the computer sleeping, because I've seen that on a few times. When the computer goes to sleep, it'll interrupt the stream.
Right there. If I'm streaming something that doesn't have that cutoff, it'll stream all night. I'll wake up the next morning, it'll still be streaming. But that's, you know, with a different service that doesn't have that cutoff problem.
Mm-hmm. I just found a blog entry on someone that says they figured out how to
disable it.
It's a 90-minute timeout, it says. Disable JavaScript after you start the stream. Oh, and then the timer quits. Because there's no JavaScript app running to know that the time has run out to make it stop.
And a good program,
good
just so
solution.
You, and a good program to use to capture the recording is one we've been promoting for a long time. It's called Total Recorder.
Mm-hmm.
It's excellent, and you can edit it after it. You know, if you get a lot of commercials and that type of stuff, if you want to go through and edit that out. And it's a shareware program, but I've used it for, wow, got to be over 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it first came out, Nick and I discovered it because we were using it to record sound bites back in the day.
Yep.
And it was great to really do a lot with it.
And there's one for that called Audio Hijack that will record audio from any other program. Usually easier than taking your computer's speaker out and plugging it into a tape recorder.
So you say I might try the JavaScript.
After the stream. And then there's no JavaScript app running saying it's 90 minutes off, I better stop the time.
Now, in order to disable JavaScript in Windows 95, how do I go about that?
It's in the settings, so it depends on the browser you're using. But usually,
Did I say Windows 95?
Yeah, you did. I was wondering there.
I meant Windows 7.
Yeah, it's using the browser preferences. There's settings for Java, and JavaScript, and plugins, things like that. Let's see. There's an extension for Chrome that will do it directly. So what browser do you use?
IE 10.
Yeah, let's just Google disable JavaScript in IE, and it should tell us where that is. Somewhere in tools and things is usually where you find that sort of thing. That's IE 9. Is that, that should be somewhere IE 10. Although every version changes everything, just to be annoying. As the web page is loading here. But we've posted, we'll post a couple of links on that too. Let's see. So, oh, it's six separate web pages. You have to page through to get the...
It's going
to
take you a while to go through it.
It's one of those web pages that puts step one on one page and then step two on the second page so they can... but yeah, you go to the gear menu, go to internet options, and somewhere under internet options, when I go to the third or fourth tier, there'll be a button to disable JavaScript. And then the trick is to you have to remember to turn it back on the next time you do go back to a different web page or that one again. A lot of web pages require JavaScript, and you don't know things aren't working right because it's basically comes up just empty. There's nothing there because JavaScript isn't running.
If you find yourself doing that a lot, it might make sense to set up a function key to disable the JavaScript.
Yeah, if there's a way to do that as well. Or use a different browser for just that recording.
That's a good idea, too.
Yeah. So use Chrome with the Chrome extension, disable JavaScript. That would work.
Oh, just one more thing in the conversation. I think you meant that you did find something that would wiggle the mouse. But what is the name of that software?
I think I closed the window already. I Googled Mouse Jiggler. Yeah, that's the name of it, mousejiggler.codeplex.com.
Okay, great.
All righty.
I'll give those things a try. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
Always little things that that some websites do, but I know most likely because of the streamers.
Oh, yeah. They don't want to pay for things that people aren't listening to.
That was one of the big roadblocks I ran into when they're working on their iRadio streaming system. Mm-hmm. How, because you're going to go to the next one. So how much of the song plays before Apple pay the royalty? Mm-hmm. And Apple said nothing. If the person skips it, we don't want to pay at all. And the music labels were saying, no, if the person starts playing it, if it plays for a second, have to pay. Well, we don't want to do that. So I think they compromised on like 10 seconds. So if the song plays for more than 10 seconds, Apple still has to pay the royalty.
Yeah.
So if you're going to skip a song, do it quickly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Actually, there's been some interesting reports that have come out from people that that do streaming music, call their own music. One guy said a million streams on, I think it was Spotify, and got a check $12.
Well, so that's sinful.
Streaming music is... what's the opposite of lucrative?
very unprofitable
for independent musicians. Mm-hmm. But it's something you have to do to get your music out there. That's always the thing. You want to give music away free until you get your big record, and then you want people to pay for it.
Yep. Oh, one thing I just want to interject. excuse me for a minute. Because both you and I and Nick were on it. Is this past Monday? We were on the Jazz Cruise. But you missed out on it. You know, you're not out of luck. It was a great time. Bill Tiberio played. There was a lot of great food. We wound up and going up and down the canal. Well, it was so popular because it did sell out.
Sold out in less than a day.
Yeah, they're going to do it again. October 7th, the Jazz 90.1 is going to do a fall foliage cruise. And it's going to be, again, October 7th from 5 to 7 on the Colonial Bell in Fairport. So if you missed out on this one, you still got a chance to get in. And it was packed. It was a great time. The food, the music, everything. It was a perfect evening. And, you know, fall, you're going up and down the canal. Here in Rochester, it's not unusual. The leaves start turning early. So, you know, hey, go to the webpage and start signing up now. All right, tell you what, that tells me right now that we got to take a short break and listen to some of the underwriters that support the show. So we will be back in a few minutes. Again, pick up the phone, give us a call at 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, and we will return back for more sound bites here on Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And like we said, our fellow companion, Nick, is a couple steps ahead of the law and probably still driving, or maybe, who knows?
Hopefully using
I haven't seen him come up on the evening news, so yeah. He must be okay.
Using his grandfathered unlimited bandwidth to listen to us.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, as he stays one step ahead of the law.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some new games that are coming. There was big news this week. Plants vs. Zombies 2 has been released.
All right.
It's one of the reviews I read said that it's the gameplay is fantastic and great. Interestingly, with game sequels, the sequel's always better because technology has progressed. With movie sequels, the storyline is usually crap.
Yeah. Well, especially since once you've been successful with a game, you say, oh, we want to outdo ourselves. Yep. You've got the money, you can do it.
You can do it, yeah. But the graphics aren't as, what was the word they used? Aren't as playful as the original one. It's a little flatter than the original Plants vs. Zombies, but the gameplay is neat. Well, so it was an interesting game that came out a couple of years ago. My son absolutely loves it. And zombies are attacking your house, and you have to grow plants to fight them off. So you have a pea shooter that shoots peas at them.
Yes, I played the game.
Yeah,
it was very challenging.
And it isn't the typical run around with a gun killing things. It's you're planting plants to kill things. So you got the pea shooter, you got something that you can put a walnut in the way, so then the zombie gets stuck and has to eat the walnut before
you
can
move
along.
Sounds like the little horror, Rocky, the
a little bit. Yeah,
yeah. On a hot sunny day, you have a thing that whips butter like a catapult. Yep. And it hits the zombies, and
you have to plant sunflowers so that you can gain enough sun to get new plants. So it's one of those games that it isn't just...
Oh, yeah, so you got to do some math in it.
Yeah, there's... and
without kids knowing it.
Right, yeah.
It's a very creative game.
Oh, that's good. Then, just a mindless, shoot them up, bang
right.
them.
Yeah, it isn't a mindless pick up a gun and shoot everything.
Yeah.
I would have to say the scariest level for me was when they had a dark night and there were just like thunderstorms going off.
You can't see the zombies coming.
That's right.
Except during the lightning flash.
And there's just a little flash and you see how much closer they are.
All right, this was probably showing my age, but when does that ever stop me? I can honestly say the last type of game I've played like that was Wolfenstein.
Oh, you haven't played
Kessel Wolfenstein.
No.
They re-released the original Kessel Wolfenstein. Kessel Wolfenstein was a game on the early Apple IIs, 35 years ago?
We're dating ourselves.
Yeah. And basically you were trapped in a Nazi stronghold and had to escape. What's really cool is that our current tablets are so powerful that they can reproduce those games exactly as they were on your tablet. So Castle Wolfenstein was re-released for iPad and I'm pretty sure Android also. All the original graphics. They did the same thing with the Marathon series on the Mac that was okay. Sort of the precursor to Halo. And so all the original graphics are there for free. But if you pay like $5, you can get high-def graphics, because our current tablets are more powerful than the computers were 30 years ago.
Back then. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones, and we've got Joe from Chittawaga. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, for your caller, I'd like to propose a general-purpose solution to his automation problems. There is a free program called AutoIt. It's spelled kind of like it sounds, at autoitscript.com. And basically what it'll do is it'll simulate clicks, keystrokes, mouse movements, that sort of thing. So when this window does pop up, it can be recognized by the title they give to the window, and you can simulate clicking a button or whatever needs to be done to dismiss that dialogue.
Yeah, that sounds just like what he needs.
Yeah. Unless there's no... Well, the dialogue is disconnected. I wonder if there's one before that saying, are you still listening?
Well, yeah, that's, you got to trap the right one. And I've used it myself. It has a a way to match parts of the contents of the window and such like. So it's eminently doable. If it's probably be much easier if it's a real window as opposed to some sites they play tricks with divs and visibility and opacity and things like that. They might have created a pseudo window, but if it actually does pop up a real window, that'll be easier to do. I mean, plus there are things like Chrome scripts, user scripts for Opera, GreaseMonkey scripts for Firefox that can be used to manipulate the page whatever which way he wants to. Like, when he said that, I thought, first thing, gee, I'd be looking for that script block in the page and immediately deleting it right out of the page. I mean, you can do that with GreaseMonkey or Chrome scripts and stuff like that.
So that was AutoIt, AUTOIT?
Script.com, yes.
Yep. All right. So thanks. If Carl's still listening, and why shouldn't he be, that's something to try. So it's a general-purpose scripting language, like Rick had mentioned. We used to call those a macro language.
Yep.
pretty much.
Where you can record a setting and write a script that, so when the dialog box comes up and says, are you still listening, you can have it click yes for you automatically.
That's the general idea, yes. And as I recall, I haven't used it in a while, but as I recall, it does come with a utility that monitors the Windows event system to see what Windows events are happening so that you can easily write your script with the events you see in the that tool.
Yep. Nice. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's what's so great about the show is that we have listeners that can call in and give answers to.
So let me get this straight. This, because we got a birthday coming up.
Yeah,
it's Labor Day. I mean, that's only scary enough. 2 weeks away, Labor Day. Summer is gone. Well, the kids, you know, the old ad for kids school back to school stuff is on and all that good stuff, and you wonder where the heck the summer went. But this will be starting our 25th year?
Something like that. Let's go.
I think
back
we start our 25th year this coming Labor Day.
Where's our timer? 24th. 23 years. Nope, wrong button. 23 years, 11 months. So we're starting our 24th year.
Okay.
We're starting our 24th. CRS. Wow. CRS.
That's pretty good.
That's a long time.
Longer than my first marriage. And none of the three of us haven't asked for a divorce yet.
Yep.
I was just checking out Quick Keys. They actually make a Quick Keys 3 for Windows XP now. So that's one of those macro
another
programs.
Macro language. Yep. Nice. So you can automatically have your computer do things, right? You know, write a little, you know, macro that where you would have to say open a window and click a button, you can have it do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Remember back in the day, Esther Vail, God love her, she used to love to do all kinds of macros with her keyboard.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, macros in the early days were like Excel, where you could write this huge programming thing, and it was all based on the menu position. So if you wanted to go to the edit menu and hit copy, you did E and then C. Mm-hmm. And then you could go to another cell and paste, and then you could bring in a formula and execute menu commands and these really long commands of automating menu scripts. And that eventually turned into scripting languages. Mm-hmm. So you can automate functions yourself.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We've got Roy in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Roy.
Wow, that was quick. Thank you.
Hey, we're good.
I got a problem with Outlook 2007. And all of a sudden today, when I do the advanced find feature, it doesn't seem to be picking up the mail for some reason. The mail is there, and it's logged in, and it's in my inbox and everything. But when I do a search, it doesn't show up.
Sometimes there's a way to search specific mailboxes. So, for example, it may not be searching the inbox. It may be searching, say, the deleted folder.
Well, Well, according to the advance find, look for messages in the inbox.
I would try running the inbox repair tool. Actually, there must be a lot of problems in Outlook cropping up suddenly, because it's like the third week in a row we've had an Outlook caller.
Wow.
Outlook is sort of notorious for damaging the database file. Outlook keeps all of your mail in one giant database file, a PST file.
Right.
And if any little bit gets corrupted, you can lose all of your mail. So Microsoft conveniently includes the inbox repair tool, which is called scanpst.exe. So you can go to start and then run scanpst.exe. So they knew this would happen and included a repair tool with the program.
Yeah, that tells you that maybe you shouldn't be using it in the first place.
Yeah, you might want to change to something else like Thunderbird or one of the other email programs. And it can read all of your old mail from Outlook and then get all your new mail from your mail provider.
Well, it's possible. Of course, I haven't tried any of those other ones. I've been using Outlook for years and years.
Yeah, it's what you get used to. It's hard to hard to say.
Now, one of the interesting things is if I do a search over, you know, the total time frame, I'll get old messages coming up. It just seems to be today's messages that aren't coming up. I don't know if that helps.
Does the search criteria have a date field in it?
Yeah. If I'm in Outlook, I hit Control-Shift-F, and the advanced find message comes up. I don't know if you're going to do that or not.
No, nobody here has Outlook.
Oh,
no.
Okay. And, yeah, there's a whole lot of fields. You can search on the subject and messages. You can search on from. You can search on to.
Yeah, you can tell it what field you want to search. If you accidentally have a date field listed that you're searching for, you know, yesterday's mail, for example, then it wouldn't find anything from today.
Right. Well, what I usually do is say received in the last 7 days. And that's usually what I'm looking for. As I go through this stuff, but nothing comes up. But if I say received anytime, I'll get old messages that are still in my inbox. Just seems to be today's messages that don't come through for some reason.
Yeah,
kind of surprising.
Yeah, it sounds like. What's the date on your clock? Is your system clock date right?
Well, that's, yeah, 8/17. That's the day, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, it's not the computer then, huh?
I don't know what it is. I've tried rebooting the computer. I've tried restarting Outlook. I don't know what else to do. Maybe it'll just fix itself by tomorrow or something.
Yeah, I'd try the inbox repair tool just to be safe.
All right, I haven't done that.
Yeah,
it's always a good idea to back up your machine, too, before you do such things.
Yeah, just in case something goes bad, you can restore your backup and get back to where you were before.
I do use the Windows backup program, backup and restore.
Good, yep.
I do that once a week. On my older machine with XP, I used to do it every day, but this backup and restore thing seems to take an hour or two to run to an external drive. And so I backed off to once a week, and it still does a strange thing. I have it set so that it's supposed to eliminate if it takes too much space.
Tell you what, Roy, if you can hold on, we'll have you back on in just a moment. We're coming up on a break that we've got to take, so just stay by, and we'll try to finish that up as soon as we hear from all these great sponsors of our show. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes for more Sound Bites here on Jazz 90.1. And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And we have Roy still on the phone. So go ahead, Roy. Continue on, sir.
Okay. I tried a few other things with the sort, and it doesn't do it. But I'll have to try this scan PST.
Yeah, I also...
tried that yet. But what I was asking before the break was about the backup and restore.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it says there's not enough room on the drive. And I go through the options, and it says that you can back up. You can set it so it retains the latest one or something like that and throws the other ones away.
Right, yeah. You can tell it to archive. and keep a backup and then put a new backup on, and that will fill your hard drive up. You should be able to, I don't know Windows backup specifically, but oftentimes you can tell it how many old backups to keep so that it deletes the old one to be able to make room to put a new one on. Or you can just tell it to back up your changes so that you have a single backup copy of all your files and all your changes.
Yeah, I can't figure out how to do that. I did the first thing you say, keep the latest one, but still sometimes it says it's too full. And so what I have to do is go into the file, and there's just one big file in the backup, I guess, and I have to delete the whole thing.
Right.
In other words, it says this has backups from certain date to certain date, and it'll be like a month or 2 months or something like that, but it doesn't give you a breakdown.
Yeah, that's in the backup program itself,
right?
Where it will read that file. There should be a setting inside Windows Backup on how many backups to keep, and how often to do the backup. How big is your backup drive, and how big is your main drive?
Well, the backup drive is a terabyte, and there's probably maybe 600 available for the backup. Before I put any backup on it at all. In other words, there's 4 gigabytes that are in there for other files.
Okay, so those files aren't getting backed up.
So, no, that's not getting backed up, no. So it seems to do the backup usually, but it doesn't seem to be able to discard. When it gets over full like that, I have to go through and just throw all the backups away and start over.
That's a setting inside the Windows backup.
Yeah, isn't there
somewhere.
So many, you can say keep so many.
Yeah, you either keep so many backups or auto-delete old backups.
Yeah, it says keep the latest one or something, but I don't see anything in there about how many to keep.
Well, if it says keep the latest one, change that so it is the latest one, not the latest five or
say
something.
Say that again?
Where the setting where you tell it how many of the latest backups to keep, set that to 2 or 3 and lower whatever that number is.
Yeah, and I don't see that.
If you're still having problems, then
you did.
It might
I'm
be
sorry.
Time to get a larger backup hard drive.
How much space is on your main drive that you are trying to back up?
It's only 500.
And how big is your hard
drive? If you've only got 600 gigs free on your backup drive and you're trying to back up 500 gigs, you can only keep one backup.
Yeah, but wait
a
minute.
So don't do archived backups. Incremental backups.
Here's the other thing, though. You're probably backing up more stuff than you actually need to. Because if you do a reinstall, say your system does crash, and you're backing up all these other programs, well, guess what? That's not going to do you a squat. Because if your machine crashes, all the software, besides the OS, programs and everything else has to be reinstalled.
Yeah,
the only thing you want to back up is your data under users.
The My Documents file is the only thing you really need to back up.
I mean, you can also, if you're using Outlook and that type of stuff, you can export your contacts and your emails and all those settings out to a file also and back those up. Put those in a folder where you run those periodically to back up all your contacts and your emails in it and send it to a folder, say, in My Docs. So, again, those are also covered. You can create another folder under My Doc saying backup of Outlook.
Yeah, and, that's what I used to do when I was running XP.
Well, you still can do that, and I would highly recommend it because, again, if your system is backing up everything on that hard drive, it's a waste of time and space.
Yeah, it takes a couple of hours.
Yeah, no, right. Just simplify it. Like Steve said, go into your users, grab the doc file folder, and just back that up.
Yeah, well, there's so many things that I was trying to save.
Yeah,
you may be right.
And
all favorites files, I have the.
Well, that's all in your user folder.
Yeah, so that's all there.
Just back up your user folder. Then you get the My Documents, you get the desktop, you get the favorites, you get your mail.
The
everything
whole ball
is
of
in
wax.
Your user folder.
Yeah.
Okay, so the user folder has all that.
Yes, stuff. And again, you can also do a search. Say if you are using some other program, say for your photos, you can also select that folder. Just to double check in case you're backing any of that up.
Yeah, I've seen people put their photos in the applications directory and not in the photos directory. I've posted a couple links on our website about the Windows backup and restore settings and where to find them, and also a setting on Outlook search. There is a indexing problem. It could be that it's not indexing the files, or you need to rebuild the index so search can find the files.
Okay, how do I do that?
Go to soundbites.org and look at the links on the page.
We've got some links there that you can look at, and we got some other callers on the line. So go and check that out, please, and let us know how you make out.
Okay, soundbites, but can you give me the name of that one file?
What file?
For the re-indexing.
I don't know the name of the file.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
look at the link I posted on the website.
The link will take you to that website where you can then find out the name of the program.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, a lot of times you can't get to the files. There's no way to get to the index file. It's probably an invisible folder anyway. And even if you could get to it, it doesn't matter. You have to run the re-indexing procedure inside of Outlook in order to do that. And the links will tell you how to do that.
All right. Tell you what. Let's go back to the phones. We got Harry from Rochester. Go ahead, Harry.
Okay. Hi. I've got a new Windows machine, and I've got an old XP machine with Microsoft Office 2002 on it. Can I use those disks on my new 64-bit Windows machine?
Is it a single-user license or multi-user license?
Good question. All I know is I own the disk and I...
Well, it will say on the box how many installs you get to use. It's probably just a single license, so you'll have to unregister it and uninstall it from the old computer. And then the bigger question is whether a 2002 Office will work on 2013 Windows.
Yeah, that's my real question. Yeah, it was Office small business, you know, Word, spreadsheet, and Outlook on it.
Yeah. Is the new PC running Windows 7 or Windows 8?
7.
You got 7 still. That's good.
Well, that's all I need. Yeah.
Let's do some searches.
Yeah, you don't want to go to 8.
Yeah, while I'm looking for that, one of the things you can do is you don't have to run Microsoft Office. There are a lot of other Office suites, many of them free. You don't actually need to run Microsoft Office, and you can still open all your Word and Excel files. Huh. Open Office is one of the most popular ones, or LibreOffice is another one.
Will that run Outlook also?
Outlook is a mail program. You can use any mail program you want, like Thunderbird or Pine, or I don't know all the mail programs there are under Windows.
Yeah, believe it or not, I like the old 2002 Outlook. It's neat, clean, not a lot of clutter.
Yeah, but I do see a couple of reports around the net that Office 2002 will still work on Windows 7.
Okay. So that could come. That would work on. Okay.
Yeah, the bigger trick is you're going to have to unregister it with Microsoft so that you can register it on a new computer. Uh-huh. And I don't know if they have the registration server still running for 2002.
Right, and then would they support it also?
Probably not. Yeah, that's the other problem.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like I'd be looking for trouble if I try to do that.
Well, you can always try, and if it doesn't work, you can uninstall.
Yeah, really.
There shouldn't be too... Well, get Revo Uninstaller first.
Get one program I recommend to everybody out there that's on the PC side, it's Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah, I've been using that one.
Yep. Good. There you go.
Yeah.
You're good to go then.
Okay.
Rock
so
and roll.
I can try it, and I won't butcher my Windows 7 operating system.
There you go. Have fun.
Thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye.
Yeah, that's always a big thing we run into with customers getting new computers, is a lot of their old software won't work. And it's a bigger issue in the Mac community because Apple switched CPUs in 2006. And we're still getting people coming in with old machines. We tend to see that. People keep their Macs longer. We're getting 2004, 2005, 2006 Macs in that they're just now upgrading after 6 or 7 years. And they find out that none of their old software will work,
yeah,
and they have to buy all new software.
Yeah, they've said that the average Mac user owns their computer for about 7 years before
right.
they replace it.
And the average Windows user is like 3.
Yeah.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phone. We've got Roger from Greece. Go ahead, Roger.
Hi. I've got a Acer laptop that my wife uses basically just for surfing the web and email. And we had Zone Alarm as the security software on there. It has been running slow, so that a month or two back, I did the Security Tango, and that didn't really seem to improve things much.
It's not supposed to. It's supposed to find malicious programs on your computer. It doesn't do anything to the performance.
Okay, even malicious things that might be slowing it down?
Right, if it found malicious software and removed it, that could be that could make it feel faster. But in and of itself, it doesn't do anything to the performance.
Okay, then I did install Avast as the antivirus program, and tried to remove Zone Alarm. And I'm not sure whether I did anything else in there, because after that, now I can't log on to the web either through Mozilla or Internet Explorer.
Well, Zone Alarm and Avast are two different programs that do two different things. So one's a firewall, one's antivirus. So you need them both. A lot of people find the Windows firewall is sufficient now. It blocks any incoming attacks. Zone Alarm is nice because it will warn you about outgoing attacks if something sneaks in another way, usually through web or email. But what you may have done is you may have blocked all in the firewall. You may have blocked all traffic, so now you can't get any internet traffic out.
Well, I did turn on the Windows firewall had not been turned on, so I turned that on, and I've been looking at that. That was a question of am I blocking something going out? But I can't see any way, you know, going into the Windows firewall, you know, section to set it up for outgoing only.
There is a way to add programs. It's an exception to the firewall to let programs through. But by default, it should let your web browser out to the internet without needing to set anything.
Okay, because what it says is Firefox can't find the server at www.yahoo.com, and I get a similar message with Internet Explorer.
Yeah. Try turning off the firewall temporarily and see if it works.
I did turn off the firewall today.
It may be
and
that.
Tried going out, and it still doesn't go out.
It may be that you didn't get Zone Alarm uninstalled completely, and so both programs are trying to do the firewall. As we talked about with our previous caller, install Revo, uninstaller.com or .org, and that can completely uninstall the Zone Alarm for you. So maybe the Zone Alarm firewall is still on, even though you remove the program, the settings might still be there blocking things and conflicting with the Windows firewall.
Okay.
So that's something to try.
The other thing you might want to try.
Would you spell the Revo part of it for me?
R-E-V-O.
R-E-V-O, okay.
The other thing you might want to try is resetting your router. If it's been a long time since you've done that, that can sometimes clear up these slow internet issues.
Turn your internet router off, let it sit for 5 minutes or even overnight, and then turn it back on in the morning, and that can clear things up. And if your router is getting old, you know, more than 3 or 4 years old, it might not be a bad idea to look into replacing it, because they can get old and worn out and tired and run slow.
Okay, it probably is. My son put that in, and I'm not exactly sure of the timing on that. May I ask you another question? With the problems that we've been having with the with this laptop,
actually, if you can hang on,
buying a new one.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
I'll tell you what, we're coming up on a break, so if you wouldn't mind, you know, just holding on, I'll, you know, put you on hold. We're not going to lose you, and because we got to take this break right now. So stay tuned. Again, we got some great sponsors coming up here that I would love you to listen to, because, you know, they keep the station going. But, excuse me, if you do have a computer question, the numbers to call are 585-966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, and you can also listen to us on line at jazz901.org. We also have a service which we haven't been talking about much, is texting us. So if you're out there and you know want to text us, you can at 585-209-9010 with your computer questions. Hey, you know, we're a computer show. We try to keep you folks in touch with all your stuff going on in your life. So what can I say? We just love doing it all and keeping you folks informed. So again, we'll be back in just a couple of moments right here at Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites on Saturday. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
I'm having an identity.
It has been a long day when you miss up your own name.
Yeah, really, you think?
Although, the number of people that misspell their own name or email address on our service forms is interesting.
Well, I get a lot of folks. As a matter of fact, it happened with Kathy and I just Wednesday night. Gave the folks my name for the reservations. And for some reason, I don't know how they do it, but they always put me down as Steve.
I get Dave a lot. I say Steve, and they hear Dave. It's the last syllable's the same, but the first is not.
And I go, what did you put? No, it's Dave. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's okay, but, you know, I'm not going
to
answer to Steve.
I'm glad to hear it goes the other way.
It goes the other way?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I don't feel too bad. Well, anyways.
Well, then we know when people call and ask for Dave, we can say, nope, not here.
Yeah, Dave's not here.
Dave's not here.
Well, we still do have Roger on the phone. Go ahead, Roger.
Okay, just to return to my previous question there. In order to use the Revo uninstaller, since I can't get on the web from the laptop, I would have to download that on another machine, would I not?
Right, put it
save
on like
it to a flash drive and then stick that in the laptop?
Yes, yep. And install it that way, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thinking about a new laptop, I guess I was going to ask you, again, her interests are in email and, you know, sort of casual surfing. What sort of basic features or minimum features should we be thinking about?
One of the things we've been seeing a lot of people do is get a tablet instead of a full laptop. Android tablet or an iPad. You can do email, you can do web surfing, you can do photos. It's smaller and lighter than a laptop. You can hold it easier. We often call it the living room computer. You're in the living room on the couch, you know, holding your tablet. The iPad has voice dictation built in. I'm sure Android has something similar. And you can get a real keyboard if you want to. We are seeing a lot more people do that. And tablets are generally, they're a one at a time function machine. You're just getting your email, or you're just looking at web, you're just looking at photos. So they can do everything, but generally one at a time. There are background processes and multitasking like that. But when you're on a computer, you often have all those windows open at once, everything trying to run at once. So we generally say you need at least 4 gigs of RAM on a new computer, and 8 is better, 16 if you can afford it.
Yeah, I would say, well, most of them now are coming with 16.
Yeah.
And, you know, 32 or yeah. Whatever.
A decent laptop is going to cost you about $1,000.
Yeah.
And if you look at a tablet, the 8-inch tablets start in the 200-300 range, the 10-inch tablets in the 500-600 range. So you can get a tablet that does pretty much everything you need for quite a bit cheaper than a full laptop.
I'm seeing laptops that are, you know, listed in the like $500 range. Are you netting enough there to make it worth?
Yeah, generally you're getting a much
cheap.
Yeah, it's too cheap. You're getting a much slower processor. It may say it's an i5. The i5s and i7s are the current processors, but it's one with very low cache, very little memory in the chip to make it cheaper. Often you don't have much RAM. It's 2 gigs or 4 gigs if you're lucky. The storage drives are relatively small, although hard drives are getting so cheap these days. You know, they probably have at least a 500 gig hard drive in them. The screen resolution isn't as high. And so, yeah, you can find a $500 laptop, but it tends to feel old faster because it isn't as capable as some of the higher-end models.
And it depends what you do with the machine, too.
Yeah. I mean, although for just email, yeah, that may be
just
fine.
Email,
yeah,
or surfing the web, you know, that may be all you need, which is fine.
Yep.
Yeah, we're not getting into any of the things like the, you know, the games, the, you know, the fancy stuff,
yep,
like that.
Yeah.
Well, making your own videos is a big hog, usually.
And that's one of the neat things about the tablets is there are lots and lots of games available for Android and iPad that do really, really good on the tablets. They almost all come with cameras, so you can shoot pictures and shoot video. So they are becoming sort of what used to be the netbook. The whole netbook industry died when the tablets came out. And that's where you're getting a lot of that, you know, basic computer need. And oftentimes they're cheap enough that you can get a couple of them for, you know, mom, dad, and the kids, and then one big computer for the family.
Okay, well, I thank you very much for your help.
Sure.
Thank you for calling.
We actually see a lot of our customers doing that. They'll get one big iMac, you know, with the big 20-inch screen.
Yeah.
And then a couple of iPads. You know, you're in the living room.
Well, like I said, excuse me, and that's the one thing I love about the way the technology is going.
Yeah.
Because before, you know, with the tablets coming in, before with the Macs and the PC, you had to either know Mac or PC, the operating systems. With a tablet, and I don't care whether it's an Android, a Windows tablet.
Windows is so Android and iOS are very similar in the way they work. Windows is completely different. Same thing with Windows 8. It's so different than the previous Windows. But Windows 8 on a desktop and Windows 8 on a tablet are almost the same.
Yeah. But what I'm saying, though, is the Android and, say, let's just say the Android and the Mac, the iPad, as far as setting them up, grabbing apps or anything else, it's the same. You know, you don't have to know the operating system. You just need to go up to the store, whether it's either on the iTunes store to get the Mac apps and everything else,
and the
Android store.
Yeah, and the stores are built into the tablet, so you don't have to worry about which store.
So you just go up, you search whichever app you want, you put it down there, it's there, it works.
Yeah, they're very user-friendly.
Yes, extremely.
Yeah. But I just went to Dell, and I looked at the Inspiron 15-inch laptop. They have one for $350, but it's a Celeron processor, so a very, very slow processor. Only has 4 gigs of memory and a 320 hard drive. So it's
not going to last very long.
Right. It's going to feel old very fast. And you may say all you're doing is email now, but you'll probably want to do more. People are going to email you pictures. People might email you video, so you might want to do more. So you start moving up the line and up the line, you get up to a i5 processor, 6 gigs of RAM, and a 500 gig hard drive, and now their Inspiron is $600. So I would still go even more memory than that, and I would go to a processor with more cache on it. So, you know, your a decent computer is going to be right under that $1,000 mark.
And that's cheap.
Yeah, from what they used to be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, laptops before, you know, $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah.
And they're so thin.
You still can spend that much if you want a gaming laptop with a giant video card in it.
But more and more folks are starting to go to the tablet.
Yep.
Because, like my Nexus tablet, I mean, I love it because I can take it to work and I can, get into various iTunes, ones that it syncs and I can listen to them at work. I can put my music on it. I got my books on there. I can surf the internet, get emails. I've got the cloud on there for the Google Cloud, so if I want to get at a particular document or anything else, I can grab it, photos and everything else. It's just very friendly, user-friendly. Whether I would want to type up a document, probably not. You know, it's...
But you can.
Yeah, you can.
You can in a pinch, yeah.
Yeah, I've done that.
With the voice recognition built in, you may not have to type at all. You just speak into it, and it does it for you.
And you know what? That has gotten remarkably improved.
Yep. You don't want to do it when there's people around because you sound stupid.
Yeah, but you sit there, you just have to enunciate very clearly and say, period.
You don't necessarily have to talk slow or talk like a computer. You just have to enunciate your words.
And just slow down. Period. You don't want to be talking real fast. So, like on some of these commercials and they're ready to go out of breath and can't take any time to understand it. Whereas if you slow down a little bit, It can handle it, no problem.
That was a big meme for a while when Apple first came out with Siri on the iPhones, where you heard the chirp that Siri was now listening to your vocal command.
Oh yeah,
you would yell a command out so that she heard you before the person who actually pushed the button. So Siri on the Apple has Siri on the iOS, so it has a nice name. It's Google Now on Android. It doesn't have a name. It was going to be Magil. That was the code name under development after Magil Barrett Roddenberry from Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Apparently they didn't pay her, so they're not calling it Magil. So it just came out as Google Now. And voice recognition, so it doesn't have a cute name or doesn't have a personality like Siri does. There's so many little Easter eggs in Siri. Ask her to marry you, and you get some interesting answers back. Or ask her how to hide a body. So people have found these Easter eggs. Movie reviews. Ask Siri about 2001, and she tells you the plot of the movie from the computer standpoint. 2001 is about an intelligent assistant that was going about his job, you know, taking a spaceship to Jupiter, and these humans came along and messed everything up. So from the computer standpoint, that is the plot of 2001.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
Yep.
You know, and again, I can remember with the old Dragon Dictate.
Yeah. That you needed to train for weeks sometimes.
And then if you get a cold, sinus issues, forget it. It just got very frustrating.
It was like having the worst secretary in the world.
Yes, exactly. He wanted to pick up the computer and throw it out the window. He's like, what? Oh, yeah, I got a cold. Darn!
Yep.
Oh, well. You know, but it's funny. We sit here and criticize, you know, what we're doing right now, you know, they can do this and that.
Things that we couldn't have dreamt being done a couple of years ago.
Exactly. I mean, you know,
it's
back,
just phenomenal.
Well, you know, we were talking on our birthday, you know, going into year 24. Back when we started, the 286s were out and that, you know, and it was the single drives and still using a coupler on your modem to dial in. Whoever thought we'd be talking about 7-inch tablets that can do the web and are more powerful.
And can play the games that we grew up on back then better than those computers back then
and
could.
The graphics and everything else, because back then it was all, monochrome.
Yeah.
It was strictly either yellow on black, green on black, or white on black.
Yeah, you remember the amber versus green debates?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And things would burn in. Remember, you had to worry about whether things were going to burn into the screen?
I actually, we had a couple of Mac monitors that some of our clients had given us to recycle. And the "it's now safe to shut off" message had been burned into the computer. So they shut the computer off. And the message comes up, because this was the olden days when you had to physically turn a switch.
Yeah.
So the Mac would tell you it's safe to turn off your computer, and then you can turn the switch. They left that running with the monitor on for years.
Yeah, so of course it would burn
to burn that image. Yeah. So they turned off the computer, left the monitor running, and then went away for a couple of years. It's sitting in the closet, plugged into power, still running, telling you can turn the switch off.
I won't forget. Oh, heck, this has got to be decades ago. A customer of mine back then, they had gotten a new Dell. And their son was so excited because they got it, and the wife set it all up for her dad. And, you know, that he was getting this new computer for, I forget what, doesn't really matter. Well, the kid had those magnetic things that you put on the refrigerator, the letters.
Yep.
And he thought, oh, cool. He was, since he didn't know how to, you know, do anything on the computer, didn't want to, he grabbed those little letters, put them on the screen, and taped them, and said, "Hi, Dad."
Yep.
Yeah, well, they got magnets in them. And back in those days with the
electron guns.
Yeah. It kind of permanently burned into the screen. It said, "Hi, Dad."
That's a good story. I like that one.
You remember the degaussing when you turn your CRT on? It went boom, and it would shake.
What the heck did I do? I didn't touch anything.
Yeah, it's trying to get rid of those residual magnetic fields. Our old CRT televisions used to do that.
Well, and also, if you were...
Although you didn't notice it on the CRT television because it took so long for the CRT to warm up, it was already done degaussing.
And remember... Also, you used to get eye fatigue and everything else because of the old tubes. Well, now with the plasma screens, you know, the flat screens, you don't get that issue as much.
As much.
I should.
Yep.
What can I say? You know, everything can't be perfect. But, you know, hey, they have made great improvements. All right. Tell you what. We are coming up on a break. And, again, our numbers are... 585-966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-415. We'd love you to pick up the phones, give us a call, and we will be back in just a short bit to answer more of your computer questions here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And we want to remind you folks, we're taking your computer questions. All you got to do is pick up the phones and give us a call at 585-966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And one thing that we haven't been saying a lot is that you can also text us. As we were saying, the technology is changing so greatly. Everybody's got the phones and they can do texting. You can text us your computer questions at 585-209-9010. Again, that's 585-209-9010 with your computer questions. So just another option.
Many, many ways to reach us.
Yes. If you want a real good scare, you can also go to our webpage and see us online live.
Yep. Go to our Ustream page. Yep. We don't have a Ustream link on the front page. I emailed Nick to put one up there.
Oh, really?
But it is, excuse me, there is one in the forums.
Oh, okay.
It's Soundbites Radio on Ustream, and you can join live with the current show. We've got 10 people watching live right now, and the past shows are there as well.
Yeah.
And then we also have the audio podcast available on the website and through podcast collectors like iTunes and what's one for Windows? Well, iTunes for Windows.
Yeah. I mean, it works all the same. You know, yep. I mean, you can sit there so you don't have to miss out. And the... Where is it? Nick's got the link, though, if you want to be reminded.
Yeah, the MyMinders link.
Yeah, the MyMinders. We got a great service also that a lot of folks, I forgot you guys are on. Well, we've got a great link, and it's up there, isn't it, on there?
I think it's there somewhere. You want to text join Soundbites, that's two words, to MyMinders, 740-I-REMIND. That's 740-473-6463. Text join Soundbites, and you'll be joined to the Soundbites list, and you'll get a reminder about 15 minutes before the show starts. And remember that standard text messaging rates apply. So that can let you know when just before the show comes on the air to remind you.
Yep. All right. Tell you what. Let's go back to the phones. We got Jerry in Brighton. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hi. I was just looking at my device manager, and I was looking at the icon that's indicated other devices. Underneath that is another folder that says unknown device. It's got an exclamation point in front of the icon on that. I was just wondering what that other device might be and why it's indicating that there's a possible error on it.
Because it doesn't know what it is.
Have you connected something new recently?
Right. It doesn't know what it is, and it's hard for you to know what it is.
Right.
Have you plugged in any new hardware recently, as Rick mentioned?
No. It's really just, I've got is a printer, really, an old HP printer, and that works just fine.
It may be some device in the motherboard, you know, an audio device or video device or something like that. Although, if everything else seems to be working fine, it's probably not that.
You could try unplugging each of your peripherals.
Well,
and
see, that's...
seeing if it goes away to identify maybe which one it is.
Yeah. It's what section is it under?
Under, it just says other devices.
Other, yeah.
Other devices, yeah.
USB devices should be listed under the USB.
And all I've got
line.
On the computer really is my monitor, which is an HP monitor, and an HP printer, and I've got the DVD drive, and that's about it.
It's so, probably one of the motherboard resources. Mm-hmm. What might work is if you remove it and then reboot, it may auto detect and auto load the driver back again.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen any indications of problems with the way it's running. It's runs just fine.
Yeah,
it's a Windows 7 operating system.
Well, you could just ignore it then. If
yeah, that's a good idea. Yep. I think. Yeah,
that may be part of the problem. Is it a name brand computer or custom built?
No, I actually built it myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's probably one of the devices, the motherboard devices, and there may not be a Windows 7 driver for it.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to go to your motherboard manufacturer and download the updated driver list for the motherboard resources. What else do they call that? I forget. There's two or three words that they sometimes use, but built-in devices, something like that.
Whatever happened to BIOS?
Well, that's before you get to the motherboard. So it may be an updated Windows 7 driver for whatever that hardware is.
Okay.
So it may be something like the modem port that you're not using or don't even have.
Yeah.
So that could be why it's not showing up either.
Yeah, okay. Because we're actually connected through a router to the internet, obviously.
Yep.
Okay. I was just exploring. Nothing was prompted me to do this. It's just did a right click on the computer icon in the start menu and saw that the device manager was there and took a look at things.
Yeah, you can try booting into safe mode and see if it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
That will let you know. Well, if it's a core process or something beyond that.
By the way, I've got it's an i5 processor that I have, and it's the 2500, which I think is there any performance difference between that one and the more current series of i5 processors?
There was a new generation of i5 processor that just came out. I think they're calling it fourth generation, based on the Haswell chipset. The previous one was Santa Rosa, was it? I forget. They all have different
code
names. Sandy Bridge, yeah. Is there Sandy Bridge, then Ivy Bridge, and then Haswell.
Okay.
The Haswell chip is engineered for battery life. So from what we've been seeing on machines that use the new generation chip, you get about 40% more battery life out of it.
I see.
And they run at a slower clock speed, but you get faster performance out of it. So we've been seeing on some of the new Macs, it's only running at 1.3 gigahertz, but mm-hmm. you're getting faster benchmarks than the old 2.5 gigahertz i5 processors.
Yeah. Is that something with the instruction set? Or?
Yeah, and it's the chip design itself. They're making the chip smaller and smaller, so the distance between pieces are smaller, so we actually are running into the light speed propagation delay.
Yeah.
It's taking so long for the electrons to get from one bit to the other that it makes the chip slow.
Gotcha.
So right now we're at a 32 nanometer process, and we're moving down into smaller and smaller processes to get the chip smaller. And then the side effect of that is you can get more chips on a wafer, so they end up costing less.
Well, I'll try booting into safe mode to see what that unknown device is then. Okay?
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Sure, no problem.
Right, bye.
It looks like the 2500 is a second generation i5 chip. So then there was the third generation, and I'm pretty sure the current one is fourth.
Well, just imagine what it'll be like once we get into quantum-based computers, huh?
Yeah, that's sort of one of the goals, is that the... quantum-based computers are supposed to be, or really, really, really fast. The problem is no one knows how to build one yet.
They have the parts. They just haven't figured out how to put the whole thing together.
When you get down to the quantum level, things go weird. Electrons can appear out of nowhere.
That's right.
While quarks can appear out of nowhere.
Yeah, but going back to the Mac side, though, you know, really their iPhone and everything else really hasn't done anything spectacular. I mean, they're, matter of fact, throwing ads out there right now that I've seen on TV. They've got the iPad and then an Android. Oh, I didn't know. I can't do that. You know, and they're
Microsoft is doing some really nasty commercials from our perspective. They're showing a Surface, Microsoft Surface, and an iPad.
Yep.
And one of the things they say is that there's no Microsoft Office on the iPad. Well, whose fault is that? It's a Microsoft program. They are specifically not releasing it for the iPad so they can claim there isn't one on the iPad because they do have one for iPhone. So it's their own fault. And they're saying that the new Surface is cheaper than the iPad because no one was buying the Surface. They dropped the price $150. But you don't need, as we mentioned earlier, you don't need Microsoft Office on your device because there's lots of other Office suites you can use.
But here's the thing, though. What I'm getting at, though, is Mac tries to copy PC. PCs don't try to emulate Macs.
Oh, no, I sense a war coming up.
Well, no.
It's just an assessment. I mean, you know.
Microsoft has been copying the Mac for years. But as we mentioned earlier, Windows 8, they are making a radical difference. iOS and Android OS look fundamentally similar. You have a grid of icons, and you tap on the buttons to do things. And Microsoft is trying to break away from that and create something new with Windows 8. The problem with new is that people
and
don't like
new. And it's going over like a lead balloon.
People don't like new.
It's not so much new. It's a total paradigm shift.
It's too different.
It is, and people are not very receptive to this whole OS. It's right up there with Windows ME, which everybody knows how much I love that, and Windows Vista. You know, he had a good run going with XP and that, but you know what? And Windows 7, but 8, he's not good with even numbers. I'm sorry.
Yeah, every other version of Windows has been unpopular.
And 8, nobody in the industry is going to it. I have not talked to any companies that are dying to get to Windows 8.
And most of those companies have just barely gone to 7, from XP to 7.
Yeah.
I think whenever you introduce a large learning curve to your users, you're going to lose out.
Oh, yes, big time.
Especially the corporate users that Microsoft has really targeted years.
But and the others, from Windows 2.1 up to Windows 7. Granted, there were some subtle changes. You know, they'd move different, and they named them and everything else. But you still had your toolbar. You still could get to your programs. They'd shift a few things around that you had to learn. And that was okay. People could deal with that. But when you sit there and slam them in the face with a total new look and not give them the option. Now, even some versions of Windows, you could go to the new look. Or the classic look.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They were smart there.
Yeah.
Now comes out Windows 8, and it's like, either you take this or don't.
And some
you
of the
know
most,
what folks are saying? Well, we
okay,
don't.
Take it.
And some of the most popular add-ons have been programs to give you your start menu back.
Yeah.
And to stop booting into the modern interface and just give me a desktop.
Yeah. It is.
And it's one thing, Apple is sort of getting that a little bit too, but they haven't forced the new look on people.
Although, if you're talking about iOS 7, there's a new look
there. There's a new look. It's similar enough, I think, that it's not going to be as big a learning curve. But with macOS, they've added the Launchpad, and that makes your Mac look like an iPad.
Okay.
You have giant buttons for all your apps.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be really great on a touchscreen computer.
Which we don't have. That's kind of pointless.
But right, everyone touches their laptop screen because they're used to that on their tablet. And
but who wants to lean over on their desktop?
Right, so we don't want touch only. I want touch and a trackpad and a mouse. So when it makes sense to touch a button or to swipe something on the screen, I want to do that. But most of the time, I'll use a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
But so fortunately, Apple hasn't forced us on that. We have the Launchpad and we have full screen mode.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big things on the iPad is one app runs at a time, and that one app takes the whole screen.
Yep.
people get confused by multiple overlapping windows. You know, especially normal computer people, normal users, they'll get confused by multiple overlapping windows. So on an iOS and most Android devices, even though you can often swipe out a little side panel, mm-hmm. it's one program at a time in full screen mode.
Yeah,
you can do that on the Mac now, and people are confused. How do I get out of full screen mode? Yeah. How do I get out of this launcher mode? Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is cool. The escape key hasn't been used in ages.
Yeah.
But now we are using it again. That's how you escape out of full screen mode.
That's right.
that little ESC key up there, no one even knows what it means because it doesn't do anything on almost any other program.
Yeah, true.
But so that's one big worry. And so far, that doesn't look like the next OS 10.9 is going to force you into that one app mode. But that's a worry we've had, is that they're moving this way. And it does make sense for brand new computer users.
Mm-hmm.
To not get overwhelmed by so many windows and so many buttons, but for us old timers,
yes,
I know how to close a window. I know how to close an app. One of my most hated features in the new Mac OS is it will remember your windows for you. So when you close your application, all the windows you had open will open again. Well, that's not how it used to be. I knew that when I closed my app, all the windows closed.
Yeah.
So when you restart your computer, all your windows open up again.
And you have to wait for it to do it.
You have to wait for it to open again, yeah. And the one use case they used for that was system updates. Even on Windows, no one likes to do system updates because you have to reboot the computer.
Yep.
So now when you reboot your computer, all your windows will come back up where they left off.
Yep, there
well,
you go.
In that one case, okay, fine. But every time else, I turn that off.
Yep. All right, tell you what, we got to take another short break. We do appreciate you folks staying, sticking around. But again, give us a call. Our number is 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And you are listening to the longest computer show here in the known world, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And welcome back, everybody. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rick Harrison.
And you are listening to this edition of Soundbites, minus Nick. Rick was very gracious, and thank you again, sir, for filling in for Nick.
It's amazing what happens.
Always a pleasure.
It's amazing what happens when you change one letter.
You got a different person.
Nick, Rick, yeah, true. I didn't think about that one. That's very good, sir. Yeah.
It's celebrate life. That's an old joke. The priest goes down into the catacombs, and you hear this moaning and wailing, and it's celebrate life. There's an R.
Only you,
yeah.
Only you, Steve.
Actually, Nick, who went to seminary, has a lot of really bad priest jokes.
Really?
Because that's
where you learn them all, in seminary.
That just doesn't... won't even go there.
Yep.
But I do want to remind folks, again, just to kind of throw it in there, on our webpage, we have some great photos of the jazz cruise that we just did this past Monday. On the jazz webpage. At jazz901.org. And I encourage you folks to kind of look it over and see what you missed out. But you know what? You get a second chance, because on October 7th from 5 to 7, they're going to be repeating it again on the Colonial Bell. It was in Fairport. It was a fantastic trip up the canal. Gentlemen pointing out different things as we're going up, and those low bridges, everybody getting down.
Everybody down. No.
Those pigeons, though.
Yeah, the pigeons underneath.
Yeah, the bridges, because the band is playing music. I mean, Bill didn't even skip a beat when we're coming to a bridge. Here he's playing his saxophone. He bends, crouches right down, keeps wailing along on the sax.
When we were downstairs, every time you go under a bridge, the music got louder because it's echoing off, and everyone's clapping and
Oh, it was a great time. Nice. Oh.
What was really interesting, I've taken that cruise a few times from Fairport to Schoen Place,
mm-hmm.
Is the Great Embankment. There's a section of the canal right there where you're 100 feet above the floor of the Irondequoit Valley, where the Irondequoit Creek comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to build an embankment. It's 1,000 feet long.
Oh, really?
Where they built up 100 feet, and the canal goes along that embankment. Hmm. And they found that the
is that near Bushnell's Basin? Where they had, remember back, seems like 100 years ago, when the canal did bust over there in Bushnell's Basin?
I don't remember that. It's past Bushnell's Basin. Okay. There's in Pittsburgh, there's a Great Embankment Park.
If anybody remembers
the
date.
There all the time when yeah. I ride my bike
yeah.
out in the
if
canal.
Anybody remembers the date, you know, give us a call. Because, yeah, there was a huge flood. I remember down there in Bushnell's Basin, the wall gave out, and they had to quick close down the canal. Because floods were, you know, flooding of homes and everything else. It was
a mess. Yeah, I remember that.
I just don't remember the date or the year even.
October 1974, according to RockWiki.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was quick.
Yeah. And there's another one in 51. Looks like, well, there's been a lot of floods along the canal.
Oh, I remember that one year, though, the St. Lawrence, we had so much rain in that, and the St. Lawrence, even the dam overflowed. Down in Watkins Glen. I mean, that hasn't happened. Why,
Mount Morris?
Mount Morris Dam, yeah. Yep. That overflowed, and I remember down there in Somerville and everything else, oh, down in that area, it was all underwater. It was major flooding in that, and, you know, 6-8 inches of water over on both sides of the town. It was just unbelievable, down the beach and that.
Yeah, that's why the Mount Morris Dam was built, is the flooding on the Genesee would destroy Rochester every, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
But look at how the weather's changed so much. I mean, it's kind of scary.
Yep. But.
So we're anyway, a little off topic here.
Yeah, I know. We tend to do that once in a while. The same with the one the folks do sound bites, you know, in SL.
In Second Life, yeah. So. Are you gonna make it this Sunday? Because Nick is gone, Dave is gone. I think, Bonnie, why don't we just cancel it for this Sunday?
Yeah.
I don't mind running it myself, but I can't answer all the other questions that you guys can, too.
Yeah, Nick gets off into a lot of the other topics and that type of stuff.
We talk a lot about sci-fi and books. And
yeah.
Not too many computer questions, but every now and then we do.
Amazing how that goes.
Yeah.
Of course, there's always apple cider we could talk about.
We just had our meeting, yep.
Yeah.
So if you have a time machine, it's my shirt today, the Apple Cider User Group last month.
That's right. And it's one of the best deals in Rochester. You know, the dues are only $30 a year. And we put on some wonderful, amazing programs once a month for our members.
Yeah, users groups are a great thing. It's like a radio show that you can go and meet the people. So there's the Apple Cider Users Group at applecider.org, and then the Rochester Computer Society for PC people, rcsi.org, the Lugor Linux Users Group of Rochester.org. So that's a great way to go and meet people and see what's going on in your community.
Seems like a lifetime ago when I used to go to all those.
Yeah.
PC Cubed.
Yeah, PC Cubed and Frog Computer Society merged into the Rochester Computer Society.
Oh, okay.
We almost did that with Club Mac, was another Mac users group. They met in Greece, and Apple Cider meets in downtown at East High. Mm-hmm. And so we were sort of the East Side and West Side clubs. And a lot of people went to both meetings, and eventually Club Mac just, you know, shut down and everyone folded.
And came into Apple
Cider. Came into Apple Cider, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, no, it's...
We're actually looking at a new meeting place, East High.
You've been there forever.
We've been there forever. And it's starting to show.
Oh, really?
The building needs some renovations. The auditorium, the a lot of the seats could use some work. The high school kids are pretty rough on those auditorium seats. So we're actually starting to look at other venues.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
It is.
You know, I mean, if it was their own property.
Yeah.
They'd be, you know, complaining, oh, you know, don't do that. They don't have respect. A lot of the kids don't have respect, but that's a whole other paragraph. Yeah. And that's the opinion of me, Dave Enright, and not the station or anybody else, but they're lacking a little bit in that area.
Yep. Yeah, it looks like, although we haven't discussed it with the cider board yet, looks like we're going to start having our Apple Cider has a Saturday Q&A that we do. You know, I usually rush down there after sound bites for questions. Looks like we're going to start holding that at the JCC in conjunction with Rochester Tech Age.
Oh.
And so
JCC is a very nice venue.
Very nice facilities there, yeah. And thanks to Joel Elias down there for working through with TechAge. And it used to be called SeniorNet, but not their TechAge.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So JCC's got a lot of nice computer classes, relatively inexpensive. Episode member Irwin Wagman does an iPad seminar. I think it's Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. So you can go down there and get your iPad looked at. So it's one of those unusual places where you wouldn't think you'd get computer classes.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of community centers do that too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of places that you can get help.
Go there and get your questions answered, and also learn. They've got a number of programs I know that you can take classes for if you're into Word or Excel or PowerPoint or just even the basic stuff of just working with a computer.
Yeah,
because more and more folks are finding, you know, that it's just the way of life. Just like your cell phones, you know, very few folks now have home phones.
Mm-hmm.
It's their cell phone. And computers, you know, instead of sitting down and writing the old-fashioned, you know, long letter and putting a stamp on a mailing, everybody wants to email. That way you can stay in touch with families and everything else, and Skyping.
Yep.
I mean, Skype is huge. And staying in touch, and it's been a godsend for the military. You know, keeping members in the service, God love their, you know, what they do for us and keeping us, our country safe, but having Skype there so that they can stay in touch with their family members at home.
And it doesn't have to come out.
Has been huge.
It doesn't have to come out of the military budget.
Exactly. But they can, you know, it just makes the separation a lot easier. I know it was hard for my nephew. He just got back from his fourth tour, and now he's back home. Matter of fact, they just moved him up to Colorado. But, you know, it's great. So he could see his wife and daughter, you know, and talk to them on a regular basis. It makes a big difference in the fatigue and everything else. They're going under a lot of stress in those countries. And, you know, being away from home, you know, I just can't say enough.
Yeah. I found a picture on of the canal break in 74.
Mm-hmm.
They were digging under the canal for a new sewer line, and they broke through the bottom of the canal.
Oh, that's
so terrible.
This picture is really cool. There's a hole in the middle of the canal, and all the water is flowing into it.
Oh.
And there's a barge, and there's a car on the barge. And it really shows you the scale of this.
Wow.
Huge,
that's huge.
Huge, yep.
Hmm.
In fact, that reminds me of a movie bug in the Silver Surfer Fantastic Four movie. They dug a hole in the Thames River and all the water poured into it, but they forgot about the water from the other end that would still be flowing down. So it stopped in both directions. No, there's still water coming from upstream.
Yeah. Oh, well. All right, tell you what, folks. You know, this is another edition of Sound Bites. Like Nick said, we thank you very much for sticking around and wasting another 2 hours of your life on a Saturday. If you didn't get into calling, again, call next week. The numbers are 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And like I said, sign up for the app that will remind you to listen to the soundbite so you don't miss out on just a lot of the fun and everything else that we talk about here. Member-supported Jazz 90.1. Have a great week, and we will see you here, same time, same station. Have fun.